Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Did you bring wine?
I got the glasses.
You guys, I made a quiz.
No, I didn't bring anything, but I'm here to have fun.
Hello, and welcome to the official Broadwasted podcast, We're Drunk on Theater. I'm your host, Brian Plofsky, and I have a message from the Nightingale. Sing! On my subway ride, I am Aldolfo, by the way, I was sent to Imagine Coney Island when I found a lonely town. Here's a list. One, I hope I get it. That's it. That's the whole list. Lucky to be me, I guess. But when you're changing lives, it's not about me. It's time to dance. The lady's improving, though. Joining us today are the usual New York New Yorkers who stumbled along, including Kevin, Toledo Surprise Jaeger.
Oh, that's such a good one.
Kimberly, or What I Did for Love Game Master, an unofficial babysitter for the hour.
Hello.
And with us today is a double whammy. I don't even know where to start. One of you, you may know one from shows like Oklahoma, A Chorus Line, Gypsy, White Christmas, On the Town, and Prince of Broadway, and maybe even in the future in Flying Over Sunset. Our other guest you may know from 42nd Street, The Drowsy Chaperone, Elf, Bandstand, and The Prom. Again, these are just the highlights. The whole hour would be taken up with resumes otherwise. Let's give a big Broadwasted welcome to friends of the show.
Friends of the show.
Tony Yazbeck and Beth Lavo.
Hey, guys.
Y'all ready for this?
Welcome.
Oh. Thank you.
We appreciate you being here. We're super excited to just like talk theater and fun things. But before we get to any of that, what are you drinking?
What are you drinking?
What are we drinking?
What I am drinking and what I wish I was drinking is two different things. But the evening is young. And if I just disappear for a moment, you know, I'm trying to be professional. It's water.
Great.
Yeah, I just ended up drinking some electrolytes. This is so like, it's like, what are we back to Broadway already? Not yet. Jeez, always.
So boring. It's like, I'm hydrating.
I'm hydrating, guys. I just finished practicing my tap dance. Sorry. Yeah. I'll be drinking something, probably of the wine variation later. Yes.
Beautiful. Kevin, what are you drinking?
What are you guys drinking?
I'm drinking Angry Orchard Hard Cider because I thought it'd be nice and springy.
Wow. Bring on the warm weather.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Kimberly?
I have a Tanqueray and tonic.
Right.
Because that's what I drink.
Yeah.
I am drinking on the rocks this resurgent bourbon whiskey. Pretty good. Pretty good stuff. Thank you for joining us. We'll just start out with what are your favorite musicals?
Oh.
The easy stuff.
Easy.
You know.
Easy to begin.
You mean musicals in general or ones we've been in?
Musicals in general. You don't have to have been in them. That's totally
good.
Fine.
I have two right off the top of my head, which is Dreamgirls and A Chorus Line.
And I have two.
Those are the ones I saw early on and kind of changed my life because I'm like, what's happening?
Yeah, for sure.
Like chorus line I saw in college, and I was just so blown away. I think it imprinted deeply, and that's why I'm sitting here with you today.
Sure. Yeah, I was going to say that Zoom scene in a chorus line is forever memorable. Tony?
Yeah, I think the first show I ever listened to on record, I mean, it's still probably my favorite show, West Side Story. Mm-hmm. And then I can't not love Sunday in the Park with George. I bawl my eyes out every time I witness it. So those two are probably up there as my top two.
Sure. So follow-up question to West Side Story. When you think of West Side Story, do you think of the movie track list or do you think of the album track list? Like, which structure do you think of when you think of West Side Story?
I mean, I think it's definitely, I mean, it's a combination because, you know, when you're a kid, you're a little more visual with everything you're seeing. But at the same time, records and music was such a big part of my childhood. So, I mean, the musical album track for sure. But when it came to experience in the musical, I think I watched the movie like 100 times when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to decipher.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And remember albums? Yeah, when I was in grad school, I wore Annie out. Mm.
We were
the album and Jesus Christ Superstar. Oh, my mind is clear. That was how I cleaned the apartment. Thank you.
We were just talking about that growing up, like what albums like our parents had and would play. So like my parents growing up, like I know the Hair original album, like vinyl, everything like by heart, because that's all my mom played. Like it's cool to see like my memory is of that, but now like I'll go on Spotify and listen to the same thing. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I'll still listen to it. I mean, I've done Gypsy more than anyone's ever done Gypsy, and I'll still listen to it. I mean, obviously, it's the best overture of all time. I think there's something to that overture more than I think it transcends beyond. I really do. Yeah. I think there's something religious about it.
You're absolutely totally. Right.
I mean, it's like I know every single instrument. I feel like I'm conducting the orchestra every time I listen to it, and just that in itself is enough, you know.
And Beth, did you do the show at the Muni? You did.
I did. It's a very small, intimate theater. I thought, what a great role to play with 2 weeks of rehearsal for 11,500 people.
No pressure
at all.
No, I now I'm so desperate to do it again so I can really, really, you know, explore for a longer amounts of time that fabulous, complex, complicated woman.
What was it like to do Rose's Turn though in front of that many people and like an outside amphitheater?
Yeah. I mean, that's religious. Kind of, yeah. It was like religious.
Yeah,
because there was a turntable and literally I plop myself on the turntable far upstage right, and I had a dream in the church.
It was a literal Rose's Turn.
Early. Well, I asked for that. I said, it says Rose's Turn.
Yeah. Did you read my writer? There should be a turntable. So actually I want to flip back to something that Beth like kind of started with. From your career thus far, is there something that stands out to you as a memorable show or a memorable experience? Because you both have such extensive careers and credits for Broadway regionally, all that, like what stands out to you? Like, what do you think back to? And like, these are memories that pop up first, like from your gut.
Tony?
Me? Oh, sorry.
I hate when people do that. They go, what do you think life is? And I go,
yeah.
Tony.
No way.
I mean, there are two justifications for that answer as well.
I mean, look, it's really bizarre. I mean, I was a child actor on Broadway and it's in,
oh wow.
People think a lot of times, you know, that it sort of intensifies the experience, and I'm sure it does. But at the same time, I came from sort of a chaotic family background. So when I discovered Broadway at 11 years old and I had this family, you know, led by Tyne Daly on Broadway with arguably the best musical written of all time. Mm-hmm. I felt like I found my second family, and I just never wanted to leave it. Sure. And I had the most incredible backstage experience with these people, let alone you're listening to this score over and over and over. And I never got sick of it for 2 years. And I think it just still stands out to me. I mean, I remember so many things vividly at 11 years old, 12 and 13, you know? And so having that be like the basis for like my love for theater, I just feel really lucky. You know, that to me was, you know, just the most exciting moment of my life, because it just brought everything out as I got older, you know?
Cool. Oh, that's amazing. I had totally forgot that you were a child actor. That you've been doing this since you were 11 years old. That is
Yeah, I mean, it was really mostly that experience. I did a couple of little things regionally, but like I went to Broadway and then I went back to Boondocks, Pennsylvania, and, you know, did all the things that other regular kids did. But it was bizarre to do that. Like, I don't recommend. Like, most kids, they just want to stay there. And now it's like,
sure.
Go back to regular life when you've experienced Broadway, you know?
Yeah. That's crazy. And that was the revival with Krista Moore and Tyne Daly, right?
Yep.
So I did a show with Krista Moore in South Florida when I was first starting out. And my parents like Googled everything I did and like every person that was in a show with me. And they found out that she'd been nominated for 2 Tonys. So they called her 2-time Tony. So my dad would always like tell all his friends, like, my kid's in a show with 2-time Tony. And they're like, there's a guy named 2-time Tony. Like,
yeah. Like, are you doing Guys and Dolls?
Yeah. It's like a gangster. I was
Harry the Horse. It was so funny.
I think my show, because it's still so fresh in my memory, is Prom, only because to really, really, really give birth to something. And as of like today, I've been associated with that story and Dee Dee Allen for 9 years. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I have such ownership, and to give birth to the creation of the story, as funny as it was and as heartfelt, but it's so interesting. You know, people say musical comedies, but this musical comedy, as well as many others, actually changed lives. And it was such a privilege just to be a part of that. And to have, again, my DNA just all over Dee Dee Allen and all over the story, and to be so involved in the creation of it is a real privilege. And so I'd have to say Prom.
Sure.
And you were damn good in that.
Yeah.
So good.
I showed earlier that I have it on vinyl. I got it for my birthday.
So cool.
That's a good gift.
Teal. Oh, my God.
That's cool.
Right.
That's the coolest record I own.
Wow. That is very cool. Again, you have such phenomenal taste.
Follow up to Prom, the video of you on the closing night singing The Ladies Improving kind of went like viral, you know, at least Broadway viral. I don't know about anything other than that.
I don't care about anything other.
Exactly. I guess my question is, you know, we all saw that at the end. You could feel the energy palpable through the video. Like, as a performer, with the already the emotions kind of pumping through you on that night, knowing that it is that night, but then having that reaction from the audience, how do you balance that? Like, specifically that moment or if you've experienced that before, how do you as an actress balance that on stage while trying to like just be there in the moment? But like, obviously there's like so much else going on, or you just give into it all?
I just, you know, initially it was like going, you know, just be professional. And then I couldn't, I just slipped completely out of character and cried and thanked the audience as Beth Lovell, which, you know what, that night, that moment, that whatever amount of time it was kind of, I don't know. It was like winning a Tony Award that night.
Sure.
It really was. It was just amazing. And it's hard for me to even articulate, you know, when I saw it, I don't remember much about the moment except crying and going, do I start now? No, just sit here and remember everything you're feeling right now. Cause God knows it may never happen again.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's what it was. But I totally turned into Beth Level. Like, I just gave up.
Isn't that the beauty though of like musical comedy and in general, where you can just like kind of do whatever you want and the audience is with you? I mean, that's why musical comedy is just so special.
I know.
You just, that fourth wall is just, it's broken. But as soon as you get out there and you have full reign to do whatever you want, and it doesn't matter. It was just, I mean, that's why you were so brilliant in that show, because you commanded the audience and they were with you the entire time. You could have said any story you wanted. And that's what I love about musical comedy when it comes down. I mean, we're going to really need it after this pandemic is over.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah.
Just bring on some joy and laughter. My God.
I was going to jump on and ask you, Tony, because I saw you on The Town. And you were brilliant in that as well. And there's a specific moment in that show where you were, I think you were singing a cappella, and there were people like throughout the theater who started singing with you. And it was one of those, especially in like such a large theater, it was the Lyric, correct?
Yeah.
So like in such a large theater to just have like the sounds of perfect harmony, just like coming like cacophonously all through the theater at you was so powerful. Like what was that to do that in a theater that big with a show that big every night to then quiet it down and just have like the beauty of the vocals being like,
you know, it was, it's the beauty of really collaborating with like people like John Rando, who, we collectively had this idea years before that. We first did it at City Center. I don't know how many years before that. And there was this sort of idea, and it's, and then it started at Barrington where we put it together and we kept trying new things and we would bounce ideas off each other. And I had a real deep connection to that song. And I felt like Gaby, sort of most people in New York feeling like everybody, like it's, there's so many people around and really nobody's around. And most of us have felt how loneliness feels in New York. And so I felt like it was a religious experience in that way. I felt like, and at the same time, I felt like the voices were, and it's, John felt the same way. It's like the voices were, sort of these spirits of the past coming to give Gaby the biggest hug and say, you're going to be okay. As lonely as you are, you've got a big heart and it will come to, you know, you'll come to terms with it and somebody will love you just as much as you want to love them. I mean, it's like every hopeless romantic's journey in New York. We're just so damn alone, you know, all this stuff. And so I remember we started that idea out at Barrington Stage Company. And when we got to the Lyric, it really took off because it was just such a vast cavern of space. I really was proud of that moment.
Well, do you know where else you can have a religious experience?
Tuesdays
in the corner with Kevin.
It's Kevin's corner.
Welcome to Kevin's Corner, where I get to do whatever I want because it's my corner. So today I went online on Google and I typed in funniest questions and I found this website that's called Funny Questions to Get to Know Your Team. And it's for like a boss to ask his team and like ice breaking questions.
Probably also happens on Zoom today.
Like, probably. People are totally doing that. So I'm going to ask some of these questions. I'm shocked that some of these questions are allowed to be asked by a boss. But we're
Kevin,
just
going to. You're very brave. You're very brave, Kevin.
We're going to see how this goes. All right. At which store would you love to max out your credit card?
Only one.
If you had to pick one.
Only one.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Only this. I'm processing what I need more: clothes, furniture, or food.
I know.
Yeah, I guess it's like the genie rules.
Yeah, I'd have to say Macy's because I can kind of get it all.
All of it. Yes, good choice.
Thank you. I'm a professional.
I'm trying to think here. Where would it be? It would definitely be like a home improvement. I'm going to pick Lowe's because my house needs a lot of work, as it always does. And last year I spent a lot of money there, but I would love to spend my entire credit card's limit there. That would be nice.
Wow. What a like handyman answer. I love that.
I'm learning because I got a lot of time on my hands.
Home Improvement in the Musical starring Tony Esbeck. I'm upset. Which storybook or cartoon character turns you on the most?
For a work call?
This is what a boss should ask his team members for fun.
You know what? If the boss asked me that, it'd be like, thank you. Thanks so much. Oh my gosh.
Exactly. It's like, I'm most turned on by the settlement I'm going to get from this question.
I don't think a cartoon has ever turned me on. Thank God. Right?
I know.
What about like, this doesn't include like superheroes, right?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, well, that's different. Let me marinate on that. Tony.
Oh my God.
So I will say that growing up, I had a crush on Roxanne from a Goofy movie.
Okay.
Of course.
Fair.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Robin Hood from like the Disney Robin Hood.
Sexy Fox.
I might have to say Batman.
Oh, that's definitely a great, solid.
Are you a Michael Keaton type of person? Are you a Christian Bale or just like the suit? That's good.
I think it's the suit. I don't really care.
Also the Bruce Wayne, who's incredibly rich.
The Bruce Wayne, yeah. That's almost more attractive than the
exactly.
That. You're right. There is something to do with like with that leather. Like it's like Catwoman kind of did turn me on a lot. Mm. It's probably the Fosse dancer in me or something, though. I mean,
oh sure.
Oh, Catwoman definitely studied Fosse when she was young.
You know 100%. She did. She was slinking around. You know.
Absolutely. Yeah, Selena Kyle's resume is full of Chicago's and you know, damn Yankees.
Yeah. Okay, this is easier. What was your favorite TV show growing up?
Oh, I had so many of them, but right off, speaking of crushes, I was obsessed with High Chaparral. Google.
High Chaparral.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just this Western, and I just had crushes on a couple of the actors.
If I didn't know that was a TV show, I would think that was the drink at a gay bar.
Hush now.
You know, a show I love that they're rebooting right now is I loved watching The Wonder Years when I was young.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're rebooting it?
I think it helped me get through some stuff. Yeah, they are. They're rebooting it. Yeah.
Oh.
Well, this is wonderful news.
I also like Dallas. I like the
great show.
Like Dynasty and Dallas.
Dynasty and Dallas. Yes.
However, to get to that, I had to sit with my parents and watch Lawrence Welk and Hee Haw.
What would be the movie title for the story of your life?
It's probably like, are you kidding me? My Life on a Fire for You by Beth Level. I'll think about that and I'll have a better answer, but then that's sometimes how I feel. It's like, are you kidding me?
That's a good one.
Has fired you yet?
My goodness.
Well, mine would be like, keep moving or something. Just move.
And then what was the worst punishment you ever received at school?
I was very well behaved. You know, I'm a very well behaved Southern girl.
Mm.
And I remember making the class laugh in fifth grade and the teacher doing this thing.
The point.
Go stand back. In the hall until I could control myself.
For sure.
I definitely went to detention a couple times, but I can't remember what it was for. But it was probably for passing notes to a girl or something. It was so stupid.
I went to detention during senior week because I put the principal's car online to sell. And I put the school's office phone number as the number to call. And it was like a brand new convertible that I put on for like $2,000. So the school finally just started, the secretaries just answered the phone and said, hello, the car is sold. Is there anything else I can help you with? Just because they were getting thousands of calls.
Oh my God.
Evan, that is not good.
That is bad.
That sounds like a Full House episode.
I was good up until that, and my mom was the librarian in like the same school district, so they all knew my mom, so they were just like, what are you doing?
That's a good price for convertible.
Yeah, it was really good. It was price to move.
Why they got so many calls.
Price to move.
Keep moving.
Yeah, exactly. What is your favorite cereal?
Ooh.
Grape Nuts.
Mm.
Oh, I really like Apple Cinnamon Cheerios.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Yes.
Mine is Killer.
Huh? Killer?
Oh, cereal Killer.
Killer.
Oh,
you're the worst. And then last one is, these are so great. Have you ever had a poem or a song written about you?
I've had a song written about, influenced by a character I've played. The Drowsy Chaperone. I've had a, it's called, yeah. So yes, and it's about drinking all sorts of alcohol. So
we love it already.
Perfect. Yeah. Cheers.
Cheers, darlings. Yes.
I don't think I have. I don't think I have. Somebody please.
Tony, all right. Broadwasted fans, you now have an assignment. Write your poems about Tony Yezbeck and send them to Broadwasted so we can make sure he gets them.
I'm going to get 1,000 DMs of poems.
And this has been Kevin's Corner.
Hey, Kevin's Corner.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Cool. Well, before we talk about the, let's talk about the concert. So you two are involved in the Town Hall's concert, the Broadway by the Year concert, and they're doing it by composers. So on May 10th, you'll be able to hear both Beth and Tony do the Candor and Ebb Years. Also included in there is the a magnificent friend of the show, Danny Gardner, and more. You can hear them all there. Go to thetownhall.org. You can check out that one. And then it's also streaming at 7 p.m. that night, Monday the 10th. But you can also get it on the website for the next 72 hours after. So check it out there. But I do want to talk about that. I guess through your eyes, through your experiences and all of that, what does theater through the years look like from your perspective? You know, where does your knowledge live of kind of the musical theater canon? And what portions, years, composers excite you specifically when it comes to musical theater? That's like a million questions. So like, this is Broadway, so answer it however you want. You can talk about Ninja Turtles too. We don't care.
My favorite musical is that one about Ninja Turtles. No, I'm so late at discovering theater and my passion, so very late, i.e. I was talking about when I have an MFA and I was listening to Annie. So I would have to say, thank goodness I went to school because I learned a lot about the history, but my favorite years are still like the 70s and the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Hair and Jesus Christ Superstar and all those albums that I discovered. And then, you know, you discover Sondheim and then your life is forever changed. Mm-hmm. And then you discover Candor and Ebb, and then you just, you know, it's the Andrew Lloyd Webber, the people that are, you know, the workers being celebrated in the Town Hall series. And then the new ones that are coming up, you know, Pasek and Paul and Matt Sklar and Chad Baglin.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, yeah, I'm a perpetual student when it comes to learning more about composers and theater and Broadway. I still have a lot more to learn.
Yeah, I first listened to, I guess my first composer was Gershwin, and I was sure. 4 years old, and I was watching Shall We Dance, and it was Fred and Ginger, and that's what got me dancing, was all the classics. So it wasn't necessarily the music, it was the music making me want to dance. And so it was always standards, and I'd always been an old school soul at heart, and it's sort of where my style sort of started from, watching Fred and Gene, and then watching Gregory Hines and finding who I was, what was masculinity, all of these things as that became who I was as a musical artist, but really just all the standards. I mean, and I feel like I'm constantly begging the Broadway community to not forget these composers, not forget this time because this is where it all came from. And there's so much magic there. There really is. So just, you know, the fact that Cantor and Ed came up, they were on the list, and, you know, Scott asked me, would you do this? I said, I want to do John Cantor's music. He's alive still, you know, and he's doing great. He's like 95 years old and he's killing it. He's still writing new material. I mean, like, mm-hmm. we're so lucky to have this kind of thing happen. So I love John Cantor's music, but I mean, who doesn't love Stephen Sondheim, but Jules Stein? I really do. I'm sort of a glutton for Bernstein and Gershwin. And so any chance I can get to do those things and put my own spin on it or whatever, that's what's really fun, is finding new arrangements and new ways of telling the story.
Cool. Speaking of Cantor and Ebb, since that's the concert you're involved in, are there shows that stand out for you, for them specifically, characters, songs? Like, what gets you going about Cantor and Ebb from the kind of their songbook?
Well, they're brilliant. Brilliant. And
good answer. Good answer.
Thank you. I'll be here all week.
Yeah.
You know, how many, I could listen to Chicago over and over and over and over again. There's just this thematic riffs that only they can write. I can recognize a Cantor and Ebb tune from an intro and be so satisfied and anticipatory about what else the song is going to bring. I don't know. Their signature and their singularity is just amazing. And I think Tony and I are really excited just to sing some songs from their catalog.
Yeah. And it's always good to, you know, it always feels like when a composer is doing their job, leave out the lyrics. You can listen to the music and the music sort of tells the story. I mean, that's when I know it's really good. I'm singing a song from Chicago. I've done Billy Flynn in that show 4 to 5 different times. Mm. And it's always a blast to go back to that show. It's just, it's crazy. And then there's other songs like Sometimes a Day Goes By that is so simple. It's like when you can find a composer that writes the most simplest tune that brings emotion all the way up into your throat. I mean, it's perfect. So I love the simplicity behind all these tunes.
They're great storytellers.
Yeah. Mm.
They really are. So I can't wait. I'm doing a song from the movie Cabaret.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. That's so exciting. That I've never sung before.
So check that out May 10th at 7 p.m. Again, you can stream it May 10th at 7 p.m. Or you can check it out on the Town Hall website for the next 72 hours after that. Again, that is thetownhall.org to get tickets and all the stuff like there. We will put it in the description of this episode as well as tweet about it. So you can check out the information there. Again, May 10th. Cool. So on that note, let's play a game.
Let's do it.
Sure. My turn. I made up a game today called Show Within a Show. And I have my Lights of Broadway show cards to help
yes.
us play this game. So in one hand, I have a pile of these are all just shows. And then we have some actors in okay. my other hand. And so when it is your turn, you will I'll sort of do this and like say when, and I'll draw you a card and you'll have one of each. And then to make this a show within a show, because I have been watching Riverdale musical episodes, either create a new show for the actor to be in which they are also doing that musical, or cast them on an existing show as a guest star in which they might be presenting that musical to the cast that already exists on that show, which is a very confusing roundabout way to explain a game. So in which case my favorite thing to do is Brian, you go first.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sure. All right, let's do this. Okay. Show within
Ready?
A show. Yes.
Here's your actor. Say when.
When.
Keala Settle.
Great. This is going to be a hit. Doesn't matter.
Okay, say when.
When.
A Bronx Tale.
Okay. Keala Settle in a Bronx, or a Bronx Tale. Okay, this is going to be, okay, we're going to do, oh my gosh.
Glad you went first, Brian. Glad you went first.
I know.
I make him go first.
Okay, we're going to do... okay, do you remember the show Boston Public on Fox?
Yes.
Okay, so we're doing... This is an episode of Boston Public, okay? So, Feirich Finkel was in that show. So Feirich Finkel somehow is, because maybe the drama on the show, he's an older man, they're going to kick him out because, like, his tenure, he's just, like, they're giving him more responsibility, so they're forcing him to retire. But he's taking on all of that responsibility. And one of the things they give him is the musical, okay? So he's got to figure out what musical he's going to do with these kids, okay? And so he brings in, he decides to do A Bronx Tale because it's the closest thing to where he grew up in Brooklyn, okay? So that's what he knows, okay? So he's doing A Bronx Tale. And what he does is he starts casting all these kids, and then there's this subplot about you know, which kids are going to play who in the musical. And then one of the kids' mother is played by Kiala Settle. And she is like a stage mom type, but she somehow gets herself into the musical. And that's how they work it into the show. And it ends up being a hit. And this backfires on the principal. And actually the principal was Chi McBride. So he was nice. So let's say it's the superintendent. So this backfires on the superintendent, who wanted to get all these older teachers out so they can bring in new teachers. Also, like, David E. Kelly wrote it, that's a commentary on the TV business where they're trying to push out the old actors and bring in the young ones to make the show like sexy and hip. And they do A Bronx Tale and it's a hit. And he's like, it's like the producers where he's like super upset because like now he's gonna have to do the musical every year, but he's excited because it was a hit for these kids and everyone felt involved. So that's the two-part episode of Boston Public revolving obviously around A Bronx Tale.
Wow. Yeah, mine will be like a two-word answer.
Sorry. That was a lot, Brian.
You know a lot about that show.
Yeah, first of all, I was given A Bronx Tale, so I wasn't going to, you know.
Right. Okay. All right.
Woof.
Kevin.
All right. I'm ready.
Ready? Say when.
When?
La Cage aux Folles.
Okay. Oh. La Cage. Good show.
Say when.
When?
Nathan Lane.
Oh my God. Work that out.
Of the camera.
Just perfect. Okay. A show within a show involving Nathan Lane and La Cage. Okay. So this is Mel Brooks decides to put the producers two onto Broadway. So they're doing the producers. But the show within the show is now La Cage. And so, but there's like an added stigma, like they're pulling in some of Mrs. Doubtfire because like they know that's coming to Broadway, so they want to steal some of that. So like Nathan Lane is playing one of the old ladies in the producer who like is donating the money, but he's also playing the star of La Cage. So he's trying to do like a trick where he like convinces people to produce a show on a fake check that he wrote in order for him to be able to do La Cage. And the whole thing is like this madcap, they're doing the show and they're not sure. It's like a Rebecca thing, like where they're not sure the investor exists, but like he's pretending it does exist.
Kevin, is this like a crossover between the producers and The Birdcage?
Yes, 100%. All happening at once. So it's basically like a trifecta of all three of those. And in the end, like he gets caught playing the role and then he sings I Am What I Am and everyone cries and they're all happy. And that's the end of the show.
Oh, I really needed to be drinking.
Yeah, the game is...
We are at a disadvantage here.
The game is when the bourbon hits.
There yes, you exactly. Go.
That is true. It's about that time. All right, Beth. Will you give it a go?
I will so try, and forgive me for mine, but you know, you've had two excellent answers, and Tony's had an extra 5 minutes to prep.
Well, but in your defense, Beth, I mean, you know, Brian and Kevin, they like make up stories like my four-year-old son makes up stories before he goes to bed. He just gabbers on about whatever the hell he sees in the room.
All right, get ready. I'm going to be gabbering like, your son is now four? He's four?
He's, I know, this pandemic is so long.
Hey, let's go. You want to see, you wanna see some twirling. This is like, you know, when, go ahead. Stop. Well, please let me know them.
David Diggs?
Oh, David. Okay.
Yes. Okay. And now say when for a show.
When?
War paint? The why would David be in war paint?
Well, that's exactly right. Just, you know, trying to think of a show within a show, all I'm thinking of is gender breaking war paint and having David and some other person switch the roles that Christine and Patty played and make it like, I don't know, doesn't even have to be gender specific, but like Calvin Klein and Ralph Lauren.
Mm. Oh. Yeah.
And do that whole story, or someone even more, you know, flamboyant, like Valentina and, you know, and then make a whole musical around that. So it's not a show in a show. It's a show because of a show and because of David and his enormous talent. You see how I'm making this up as I go?
Yes.
I think I poop my pants. So
no wrong answers. Tony, would you like a turn?
Good game. Good luck, Tony.
Yeah.
Okay, say when.
When?
Bandstand.
Oh!
Oh! I okay, say when. Someone in that show? Time. When?
Tim Curry.
Brace your four-year-old pair.
You know that British man in Bandstand?
Jesus. Let's see here. Oh, God. All I'm thinking about is, like, now that we've said Chicago, it's like, what if, like, okay, let me think here. Let me think here. Tim Curry. I have bizarro nightmares, but one of them would be, like, really musical, though. So what if, like, so, like, instead of, like, when in Chicago, the musical, when they go, we want Billy.
Yeah.
Billy would come out, right? But his back would be to the audience. And then he would flip around and Tim Curry would be there. And he would just announce that we're about to perform the Star Spangled Banner, and a whole row of, like, trumpets and saxophones and, like, drums would come out, and they would perform the Star Spangled Banner, and all the ladies would literally just die. They would just die on the floor. There would be no more ladies. The band would walk out because they just get jealous. There's just, like, there's no room for the band that's actually on the bandstand itself. Bandstand. It could be about the bandstand in Chicago.
There you go.
That's another story. Okay, so but Tim Curry would then at that point give us a full oration of all of the wars that men and women have died in. And it would just be a complete political bore of a show. And then it's over. And we call it Bandstand in Chicago.
Yes!
I think that's wonderful.
Kimberly, are you going to go?
I'll have a turn. Okay, someone say when for me.
When?
On your feet.
Okay.
All right.
When?
Anne Harada.
Okay, Anne Harada is on your feet.
Anne Harada does on your feet. I'm, like, creating this very strange, like, sketch comedy show in my mind where, like, it's just a sketch of Anne Harada being, like, a very, like, she's a choreographer that didn't read the script. And she has shown up to this height, like, she has shown up to, like, Broadway rehearsals to teach On Your Feet, and is very confused why no one has point shoes on. And then she decides to do an entire number because she really wants to put her own stamp on it. That she wants to do an entire number on your hands And so she's just quizzing everyone on their handstands. And she's making them walk across the room on their hands.
On your hands.
Yeah. Like, the concept for this revival is hands.
Yeah.
And she just hasn't, like, has clearly, like, not prepared or just not read the script and just assumed she knew what it was about. Perhaps she's wearing a beret. That's the first thing that came to my mind. I don't know why.
That's my next favorite phrase. The concept of this show is hands.
They're everywhere. That was show within a show.
Yay. Woo. Before we sign off here, sometimes we end with one last question, and we call this Stage Door Stories.
Stage Door Stories.
We're going to ask both of you, basically, you know, you've had a lot of experience as a performer coming out to the stage door. You know, what's the first story that pops into your head? It could be funny, it could be heartwarming, or it could just be kind of a general feel for when you walked out of a stage door for a specific show or a specific performance. We just love to hear those stories, and we'd love to hear your experiences in context of those stories.
There's been some
Beth, go ahead, Beth.
There's been some amazing experiences, particularly with prom. I mean, again, I'm sorry I keep referencing that, but it's so fresh in that we would come out the stage door and sometimes kids would come out to us and thank us.
Mm.
Come on. And or say to me, this is my mother and she doesn't know that I am going to come out when we go to dinner afterwards. Another one of my favorite ones is when I took over for Christine Ebersole in the revival of 42nd Street. And I came out the stage door and someone said, when is Christine coming back?
Oh, no. You know, you always remember the ones that like horrify you. I feel like I have so many, but there is one that sticks out. I've told most of my friends this story because it's just too good. I've never said it on stage or in a show before, so this should be fun. I swear it was all joy, too. I walk out of the stage door on the town. It's got to be my seventh or eighth show of the week. I mean, I was completely burned out after a year of doing it, but just exhausted, sweating, can't wait to go home. And I'm signing autographs, and a father, probably 45, 50 years old. He's freaking out that I'm there. And he says, God, you were just fantastic. You're such a dual threat. And I was like, which one am I not? And I'll just never forget that because I mean I've never heard that before. I don't know if he knew what he was talking about, but perhaps he was, and he was just being like really sweetly offensive to me, you know.
maybe he meant an amazing performer and an amazing person.
Let's see that
half full. I also one of my favorite things too is in Bandstand. I came out the stage door. And most of the time they wouldn't recognize me just because I look different. But literally someone said, are you wearing a fat suit?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Not. It's just.
Well, yeah, or I did when I was doing Prince of Broadway. This happened a couple times by slightly older, the older crowd. And they said, you know, because we did 10 different roles in Prince of Broadway. It's kind of a variety show of Broadway shows. And they would just say, you're too old. You're too young to be playing Ben in Follies. Just too young. And I went, yeah, I know. It's Prince of Broadway.
This wasn't a production of Follies.
Yeah.
You know, in the books that or the movies that Tony and I write, or the autobiographies, we'll share more of those.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing those. That was awesome.
There will be scripts so that everyone can role play at home.
Yeah, exactly. But as a reminder, check them out May 10th, thetownhall.org. That's May 10th, the Kindred Ebbers with Beth, Tony, and then friend of the show, Danny Gardner, and more on that night. 9 to 10 songs per per show, and then Dance Number by Danny again, and then you can do the Andrew Lloyd Webber on May 24th. Thank you both so much for joining us, taking your time and spending it with us. We really appreciate it. We both really envy both of you and love both of you as performers. We've seen both of you in multiple shows, and we're always blown away by both your talent and your empathy. And so we really appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us here today. You can follow us at Broadwasted on all social media platforms. You can find us on Facebook doing some theater nerdy stuff. You can, of course, join our Patreon. We're doing some fun things there monthly. And then you can find us wherever you get your podcasts, like Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Rate and review us there. 5 stars, please.
Thank you.
Again, thank you, Beth. Thank you, Tony.
You're welcome.
We can't wait for that for Broadway by the Year, but also we can't wait to see you live again. We count down the days until that can happen. So thank you for spending the time here. But as we end every episode, we raise a glass and we say,
cheers.
Cheers. Thank you, guys. Pleasure.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.